That's in the Old Testament, Samuel, 1 Samuel. As we continue our study in the life of King David, although today we're going to talk about King Saul. My message today is entitled The King and the Darkness, from 1 Samuel chapter 28. So I'll give you a minute to find that, and if you don't have a Bible, it's okay. We're going to put it on screen. As we journey through the life of David, we saw how David spent more than a year out of fellowship with God. He had grown pessimistic in the wilderness wanderings and had come to a place in his mind where he was certain that Saul was going to get him. Saul was going to kill him. And so in an act of lack of faith, David took his militia and all their families into the land of Philistia. There he joined the service of a heathen king. This king considered his militia to be a very useful mercenary force. And as we noted in last week's message, David and his militia acted for several months as a band of bandits, striking and attacking foreign tribes and looting their possessions. Now, he did lie to the Philistine king he reported to and told that king that he was actually raiding Hebrew people when, in fact, he was raiding the people who were in league with the Philistines and were enemies of the Jews. David never intended to fight against his own people. He kept the scope of his raid secret from the king whom he served, and he hoped that he'd be able to do that and never have to fight against his fellow Hebrews. But that hope crashed down when the Philistines decided that they would create a joint military effort and invade Israel, and his king, who he now served, expected him to go along with it. David found himself in something of a pickle. He had been pretending to be a new friend to the Philistines, but now that friendship was going to be tested. And that's where we left off. Now today, there's a twist in the story. King Saul, who spent many years chasing David, trying to get rid of him, was now being threatened with this Philistine invasion. And even though we are studying the life of David in our series, today's message centers on Saul. Saul made many mistakes in his life, and right now he's about to make the biggest one of his life. Now, as I mentioned last week, the Philistines were a combination of five city-states. When all those five states combined their armies together, they made a massive fighting force. And that's what happened here. All the Philistines joined together in their mission to invade Israel. And when they did this, they outnumbered the Israeli army, and the Philistines had iron chariots, which the Hebrews did not have. So the Philistines had a distinct military advantage. And so as King Saul is facing this massive army with their iron chariots, he is scared. And King Saul is trying to get some encouragement. So let's begin chapter 28, where we left off last week, with verse 3. Verse 3, chapter 28, I call the silence of God. Now Samuel had died, and all Israel had mourned for him and buried him at Ramah, his own city. And Saul had put the mediums and the necromancers out of the land. The Philistines assembled and came and encamped at Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel, and they encamped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by the Urim or by prophets. The great national prophet of Israel, Samuel, whom we talked about in previous lessons, had now died. He was gone. Samuel had been a mentor to King Saul, and during King Saul's early reign, Saul had followed Samuel's leadership and advice. And one of the things that Saul had done was to get rid of the people who were involved in the magic dark arts, the mediums and the necromancers. Now, I'm no expert on this, but what I understand is a medium is somebody who says they can contact somebody you know, and a necromancer is someone who claims they can contact somebody you don't know, but you want to talk to. And Saul had worked to get rid of those folks. You see, God had told his people that he didn't want that kind of activity being at all allowed in the promised land. He spoke that through Moses when the people were going to enter the promised land. Let's take a look at it. Deuteronomy chapter 18, verses 9 through 14. Here's what God says through Moses. When you come into the land that the Lord your God is giving you, that would be their promised land, which will later become Israel. When you come into the land the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not learn to follow the abominable practices of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who burns his son or his daughter as an offering. That was actually people who would worship a god named Molech. And they would worship this god named Molech by taking a little baby, and this iron caricature of Molech had his arms out like this, and they would place those little babies on those arms, and those arms would be red hot, and burn those little babies to death. Can you imagine doing that? You shall not do that. You shall not practice divination or tell fortunes or interpret omens or a sorcerer or a charmer or a medium or a necromancer or one who inquires of the dead. For whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord. And because of these abominations, the Lord your God is driving them out before you. You shall be blameless before the Lord your God. For these nations which you're about to dispossess, listen to fortune tellers and to diviners. But as for you, the Lord your God has not allowed you to do this. God's very clear. You have nothing to do with these dark magical arts. You have nothing to do with these mediums, necromancers, these sorcerers, these people who are charmers, these people who follow that terrible practice of killing children in the name of their God. You have nothing to do with that. You know, the God was so serious about this that he even pronounced capital punishment upon Jews who disobeyed. Let's look at Leviticus chapter 20 and verses 27. A man or a woman who is a medium or a necromancer shall surely be put to death. They shall be stoned with stones. Their blood shall be upon them. If there's any person in your midst who practices this, you kill them. That's pretty serious, isn't it? That's equal to murder. That crime is equal to murder. Because God knows that what will happen if these practices are allowed, people will gravitate to them. They'll gravitate to them. They'll say, oh, you can consult the dead. Can you raise up Uncle Henry? I'd like to ask him a question. Can you raise up Aunt Mo? Can you raise up that guy who was a great rich man one day? I'd like to ask him about how to get rich like he did. God knew the hearts of people. He knew what would happen if that kind of stuff was allowed. And so it's disallowed. By the way, it's still disallowed. It's still not appropriate for God's people. Now, when the Hebrews conquered the promised land under Joshua, they pretty much got rid of all those folks who did that. But the Hebrews being the Hebrews, over a period of centuries, those practices began to reappear. They began to come back. And when Saul became king, he acted under Samuel's guidance to get rid of those folks too. But he didn't get rid of all of them. And that's going to be a thorn in his side that's going to create a problem that we're going to see. Now, as I noted, the Philistines had decided to invade Israel. They came with their combined armies. There were thousands of them. And King Saul had taken his smaller army out to face them. He organized his troops on a mountainside. The Philistines were there in the valley. By the way, that valley will one day be called the valley where Armageddon will be. And so the Israelon Valley, that's where these guys are. Thousands of them with their iron chariots. And here's Saul with his troops. And Saul looks out upon those things, and the scripture says his heart trembled greatly. He was scared. Man, this military force is going to crush us. And Saul was seeking a word from God, but he couldn't get any. You see, God would not speak to him. The Lord wouldn't answer his prayers. Saul's sleep was troubled, and he couldn't consult the priest. You remember in one of our lessons that he talked about that he killed the priests? He gathered them up, and he killed them in a town called Nob. You know, and the only one that escaped went to David. So there wasn't any priests for Saul to consult. There wasn't any prophets for Saul to consult. The only great prophet, Samuel, was dead, and all of his students who followed Samuel and learned from him, they got away from Saul. So there's no prophets, there's no priests. And having no priests, you couldn't use that Urim and Thummim, that weird situation we talked about in a previous lesson, where the priest would have two rocks in his vest, one white, one black. And it would be like in a little bag. And according to their understanding, because of the standing of the priest, that a person could ask and say, God, will you give me a yes or no answer? And the priest would reach into his bag and he pulled out a white rock and meant yes. And he pulled out a black rock and meant no. Well, the only priest that left alive went to David. And David's got that bag with the priest that's left alive with him, Abiathar. So there's no way for Saul to get any message from God. Now, I want to consider a principle before we move on to the story. You see, God doesn't normally say anything to us if we don't obey what he's already told us. You have to obey what you already know before you get new information. You obey what he's told you first, and then he'll give you new information. Obedience opens the door for new information from God. Disobedience closes the door. So Saul has been living his life in disobedience to God. Judgment's already been pronounced upon him, and so he doesn't get any word from God. But he wants it. He certainly does, because he's in trouble. He's in trouble. You know, it's interesting. People want God when they're in trouble. I don't know how many times people come to me and say, preacher, will you pray for me? I got an operation coming up. Will you pray for me? I've got this illness. I've got this condition. I've got this. It's always a physical issue. I've got this coming up. Will you pray? You know, they don't come to church. They don't read scripture. They want prayer when they're in trouble. You know, well, that's what Saul was. He didn't follow God. He was out of fellowship with God. He'd been disobedient to God. But when he got in trouble, he was trying to find information. God, tell me something. Give me reassurance that we're going to beat these Philistines. God was silent. So that leads Saul to do something weird. Let's move on in our story. Verse 7 through 11, I call the sin of Saul. Then Saul said to his servants, seek out for me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servants said to him, behold, there's a medium at Endor. So Saul disguised himself and put on other garments and went, he and two men with him. And they came to the woman by night. And he said, divine for me by spirit and bring up for me whomever I shall name to you. The woman said to him, surely you know what Saul has done, how he's cut off the mediums and the necromancers from the land. Why then are you trying to trap me, trap my life to bring about my death? But Saul swore to her by the Lord, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing. Then the woman said, whom shall I bring up for you? He said, bring up Samuel for me. Saul felt desperate. And he told his guys, find me somebody who's a medium. God won't speak to me. Find someone who's a medium. That's the very kind of person he got rid of when he was a young king. Now he wants one. The Hebrew word for medium is awa. It has the meaning of mumbling, speaking with a strange hollow sound, like you're channeling something. Anyone listening to the medium would not hear the voice of the person they knew. It wouldn't sound like Uncle Joe or Aunt Mo. It would just sound like the medium making a weird sound, and it was supposed to be the voice of the person who you were trying to reach. It wasn't, but it was supposed to be that. You know, later on in Israel's history, Isaiah the prophet would rebuke the Hebrews because they still had this issue of going to mediums. Let's look at what Isaiah said in Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 19. Isaiah says this, and when they say to you, inquire of the mediums and the necromancers who chirp and mutter, should not a people inquire of their God? Should they inquire of the dead on behalf of the living? The answer is no. No, you don't do that. You don't do that then. You don't do that now. It makes no sense. Well, the truth is, hear me on this, mediums don't really talk to the dead. They claim to, but they don't. They work with a demon. They work with a demon. They may not even know they're working with a demon, but they are. The Bible calls them familiar spirits. And when the medium, so-called medium or necromancer, tries to go into a trance and call up the spirit of Uncle Joe or Aunt Mo or whoever it is, what actually shows up is a demon who impersonates that person. And the demon may know lots of facts about that person, demon may know things about that person, but the demon pretends to be that person. That makes sense? You're not really talking to Uncle Joe or Aunt Mo. And my friends, the same thing is true today for the people who claim to have so-called spirit guides. Spirit guides are nothing but demons. Now, the person who's channeling this may not even know that that's what a demon, that they're dealing with a demon, but they are. That's the truth. Well, here's King Saul trying to find a medium, the very kind of person he chased out of the country years before. And of all things, his staff know where one is. They say, King, we know where a medium is. You didn't get rid of this one. She's over at Endor. Well, there's a technical problem with that, because you see, from where Saul is camped on Gilboa to the town of Endor, that's 6 miles away. And it's actually 2 miles behind the Philistine lines. It's 2 miles behind where the Philistines are camped. So to get to that medium, Saul's going to have to travel 6 miles and stay out of the sight of the Philistine army. And then he's going to have to travel back and stay out of the sight of the Philistine army. So it's really something of a gamble here. But Saul's desperate. So he did exactly that. He took two of his trusted officers, they put on civilian clothes, and they made the 6 mile hike to this woman's place, carefully avoiding the enemy. And when he finally got to her place and he met her, he told her, I want you to do your special job. I know you try to keep it secret, but I want you to be a medium for me tonight. I want you to call up a spirit. And her first reaction is, this is some kind of sting operation. You're trying to get me killed. Don't you know the order that King Saul has given, that anybody who practices the dark magical arts will be put to death? Don't you know that? And Saul says, don't worry about that. He doesn't tell her who he is, but he says, I'll make sure that nothing bad happens to you. You just go ahead and call up the person I name. It'll be okay. So eventually she says, well, all right, who is it you want to talk to? And he says, Samuel. Now that's kind of strange. Here is God. And not only does he say, you won't get in trouble by calling him up, but he actually uses the name of God, saying, as the Lord lives, I'll make sure you don't get in trouble for doing this. Here is a guy who's out of fellowship with God, trying to use the name of God to do something that God has already condemned. It ain't going to work. You know, it's also a judgment against Saul himself, because God had said something else about going to these mediums and necromancers. Let's look at Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 6. If a person turns to mediums and necromancers, whoring after them, I will set my face against that person and will cut him off from among his people. Don't do it. It's judgment upon you if you do. And yet here's King Saul doing exactly that, contradicting God's moral law. And who does he want to hear? He wants to hear Samuel. He wants Samuel's advice again. This man, Saul, who's out of fellowship with God, about as far out of fellowship with God as you can get, wants to talk one more time to God's prophet. And I guess he's thinking, well, if God won't speak to me directly, maybe I'll get the message from Samuel if I can get a hold of him. So I'll use this medium to do it. Well, it's not going to work out like Saul thinks. Move on to our story, verses 12 through 14, I call the spirit of Samuel. When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman said to Saul, why have you deceived me? You are Saul. The king said to her, do not be afraid. What do you see? And the woman said to Saul, I see a God coming up out of the earth. He said to her, what is your appearance? And she said, an old man is coming up, and he's wrapped in a robe. And Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he bowed with his face to the ground and paid homage. Now, this is one of the strangest passages in the Bible, and it deserves some explanation. But one thing is crystal clear. This medium woman did not call up the spirit of Samuel. She didn't have the power to do that. When the text says that the woman saw Samuel and she cried out with a loud voice, it's saying she screamed. She was screamed. This wasn't the familiar spirit that she's used to dealing with. This is actually a different person. This is actually the prophet. She's terrified. Now, what most scholars believe is that God did something special on this occasion. God intervened. He actually sent Samuel to talk with Saul. This medium had nothing to do with bringing him up. Neither she nor her demon had any power over the righteous dead. She saw Samuel wearing his prophet's robe and coming up out of the earth. Now, that deserves an explanation. You see, Old Testament saints did not go to New Testament heaven. The work of Jesus wasn't done yet. The cross of Jesus hadn't happened yet. Old Testament saints went to what Jesus called Abraham's bosom. Abraham's bosom was a place of the righteous dead, sometimes referred to as paradise. And what actually happened is when Jesus was crucified, do you know that between his crucifixion and his resurrection, he went to the place of the righteous dead and he escorted those people into heaven? Because his blood had been shed. But prior to Jesus dying on the cross, the righteous dead went to a place that God had prepared for them. In the parable that Jesus gives of the rich man and Lazarus, you might remember in that parable, Lazarus goes to what's described as Abraham's bosom, but he sees the rich man in the place of the unrighteous dead, which Jesus calls hell. You know, there were two places. And so, Samuel is in the place of the righteous dead, and God allows Samuel to appear. But here's the deal. It's not this medium's voice who gets strange and acts like she's channeling the spirit of Samuel. Samuel shows up. He appears in the room. He's there. And they see him. The men see him. Saul sees him. The woman sees him. Everybody sees Samuel. And God allows that Samuel appears like they remembered him. An old man wearing the prophet's robe. Now, does that mean that we go to heaven, we're going to have an old face? No, it doesn't. This is a special act of God for that occasion. And Samuel appeared like they remembered him there in the room wearing the prophet's robe. This woman is a pagan woman. She's a woman who used the dark arts of magic, and she's used to seeing things and seeing demonic things. And when she sees Samuel, she sees a being brimming with light. And that's why she says, I see a God coming up. She's never seen anybody like that, brimming with light. Man, he's not a God. Remember, she's a pagan. But he looks divine to her because he's filled with light. And so he appears. And King Saul gets down on his knees right in front of him. He's stunned. Samuel's there. Everybody sees him. And Samuel has a message, because God did send him. Samuel has a message for Saul. So let's look on verses 15 and following. I call the speech of the prophet. Then Samuel said to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? Saul answered, I'm in great distress, for the Philistines are warring against me, and God has turned away from me, and he answers me no more, either by prophets or by dreams. Therefore I have summoned you to tell me what I shall do. And Samuel said, why then do you ask me, since the Lord has turned from you and become your enemy? The Lord has done to you as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and has given it to your neighbor David. Because you did not obey the voice of the Lord and did not carry out his fierce wrath against the Amalek, therefore the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will give your army, Israel, also with you, into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow, you and your sons shall be with me. The Lord will give the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Well, this wasn't the message Saul was seeking. Samuel appears and he first says, why have you bothered me? He doesn't say, man, I'm back on earth again. This is great. No, Samuel says, why have you disturbed me? I was happy where I was. You know, why have you bothered me? And Saul says, but Samuel, I got a question for you. The armies of the Philistines have all gathered together, all five of the city states. I mean, there's thousands of them, and they got chariots, and they're about to overwhelm us. I need to know what to do. And Samuel's saying, in essence, you big dummy, you fight against them. You do that. But let me tell you something, Samuel says. This is what I prophesied. God spoke through me years ago and told you that he was going to tear the kingdom away from your hand and give it to one who's better than you, and that's David. And God is doing that now. And tomorrow, you and your boys are going to die. And tomorrow, your army's going to be defeated. You have led the nation into sin, and so now the nation's going to suffer. Not just you. The nation's going to suffer. As the character of the leader is, so becomes the character of the country. And you and your army are going to suffer. Now, that's not what Saul wanted to hear. He wanted some encouragement. He wanted a pep talk. He wanted Samuel to say, you're going to beat them. It's going to be a miracle. It's going to be fantastic. Instead, Samuel says, oh, you guys are going to be wiped out. And tomorrow, you're going to be with me. Now, when he says that, he doesn't mean that Saul will be with him in the place of the righteous dead. He just means that Saul's going to be dead. I believe that his son Jonathan was going to the place of the righteous dead. But not Saul. Not Saul. He was just going to die. Now, Saul had an interesting and unique opportunity that most people don't have. Very rare that anybody does that. He actually knew the day of his death. I mean, he's told in advance, tomorrow you're going to die. Now, what would you do if you knew for sure that tomorrow you're going to die? What, would you just live it up and curse God, say, I'm going to have as much fun as I can? Or would you try to get your heart right with the Lord? And that's what Saul should have done. He should have repented and got his heart right with the Lord. But he doesn't. All he does is get more depressed. So we continue on our story. Verses 20 through the end of the chapter, I call the supplication of the witch. And the reason I say witch is because some of the Bible translations call this lady the witch of Endor. So let's look at verse 20 and following. Then Saul fell at once full length on the ground. He collapsed, filled with fear because of the words of Samuel. And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten nothing all day and all night. And the woman said to Saul, and when she saw that he was terrified, she said to him, behold, your servant has obeyed you. I've taken my life in my hand and have listened to what you've said to me. I did what you told me to do. Now, therefore, you should also obey your servant. Let me set a morsel of bread before you and eat, that you may have strength when you go your way. He refused and said, I will not eat. But his servants, two guys, together with the woman, urged him, and he listened to their words. So he arose from the earth and sat on the bed. Now the woman had a fattened calf in the house, and she quickly killed it, and she took flour and kneaded it and baked unleavened bread of it. And she put it before Saul and his servants, and they ate. Then they rose and went away that night. Saul collapsed when he heard this prophecy of Samuel. All his strength left him. He just lay there on the ground in despondency. The spirit of Samuel vanished, and the strength of Saul vanished. This medium, witch, urged him to get up and eat. She knew that he had traveled a long distance to come see her, and he needed some nourishment to go back. And at first he refused. But his aides encouraged him along with her, and at last he agreed. And so, still nighttime, she had on her property a fattened calf. She killed it, cooked it, kneaded some unleavened bread, kneaded bread, baked it, and fed them a sort of a supper breakfast meal. And they ate that. You know, when we hear the term fattened calf, we remember the parable that Jesus talked about, the lost son who left, the prodigal son who went off and came back, and his father said, let's celebrate, let's kill the fattened calf and celebrate and rejoice. Normally that idea of killing the fattened calf and cooking it refers to rejoicing and celebration. Not here. No, this is the last meal of a condemned man. And I suppose these three guys ate that meal in silence. And then they had to travel their 6 miles back, watching out for the Philistine army, getting back to their lines, which they did. King Saul had spent his last night on earth in the dark, seeking a person of darkness. And now his soul is filled with the darkness of lost hope. He would not survive the coming day. As we see in a coming lesson, that's exactly what was going to take place. Well, that's kind of a depressing story, isn't it? I mean, that's not exactly the positive things that we like to hear, you know. This is not exactly a lesson that, oh, the good guys win. They need good guys. The only good guy's dead. And he came back by the act of God, gave a message to the bad guys. So what can we draw from this story? Well, I think as we wrap up, we can draw a couple of things. The most important is this. There's a danger of believers toying with the darkness. There's a danger of believers toying with the darkness. Now, I love magic. I love to watch Penn and Teller on television. I love to watch the David Copperfield specials on television. But you know, that kind of magic is sleight of hand. It's trickery. As Penn says, it's deception for the purpose of entertainment. We know that's not real magic. They're not trying to do real. They're doing tricks. That's okay. That's not what we're dealing with here. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about here people who think that they have magical powers when what they really have is demonic influence. There's the seriousness of the darkness. The seriousness of the darkness. 1 Peter 5:8, verse we've used before. I'm sure I'll use again. Peter says this, "Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour." Satan is active and he's persistent. And one thing he will use is deception. He will use deception over and over and over. And he's persistent. And we need to recognize we have an enemy. Now, I do want to have the right kind of attitude about the devil, because sometimes people think about the devil and God like they're equal. They're not equal. Let me just talk in slang language. The devil ain't nothing but an angel. That's all he is. He's just an angel. He's a powerful angel. He's just an angel. He's not the same universe with God. He's just an angel. But he is a strong angel, and he has a lot of fellow angels with him on his team that are seeking to destroy people's lives. And they are active about it. And we need to be aware of that. But we also need to be aware of something else. The power of Jesus is greater than the power of darkness. Let's look at a Bible verse from 1 John chapter 3 and verse 8. 1 John 3:8, where John the Apostle writes this, "Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil." He's talking in that context about constant sin. Somebody tells me they're a Christian and you see no evidence of Christ in their life, I know they're lying. "Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil, for the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to what? Destroy the works of the devil." Destroy the works of the devil. You know, I had a privilege of reading a book about a month ago by a fellow named John Ramirez. Fascinating book. It's a testimony of his life. The title is Out of the Devil's Cauldron. John Ramirez was a Puerto Rican who lived in New York City. He might have been Cuban. So I may have misidentified him here, but he was Hispanic. And he and his family were witches and warlocks. And he, from an early age, got very deeply involved in Santería, which is one of the versions of demonic worship. And he rose in the ranks to where by the age of 35, he was the fourth highest person in that concept of Santería, the fourth highest in satanic worship. And he was called among the people a son of Satan. He actually married his wife on Halloween at midnight at their satanic meeting. He was a warlock. And John Ramirez said, "I had power. I knew the names of demons. And I could curse somebody, and those demons who were associated with me would go act on that curse, and they would go harass somebody that I cursed. I had power." And he did. Demonic power. But he met a lady, because he wound up, his wife wound up divorcing him, of course. And he became single again, and he met a lady who was a Christian. And she invited him to come to his church, her church. And he just sort of scoffed at the idea, but she was persistent. And he went a couple of times. And as he went there, he sort of was puzzled. But he told her, he said, "I have all this power. And if your God is stronger than this black magic I have, let him prove it." Well, God did. And of all things, he did it in a dream. John Ramirez was asleep, and he had a vision. And in that vision, he saw Satan. He says Satan was 12 feet tall. I don't know. That's what he claimed. Satan was 12 feet tall. And Satan was speaking to him as his son of Satan, as one of his devoted followers, and saying, "Come with me. I've got a special place for you." And of all things, John says, all of a sudden, a cross, a 4-foot white cross, appeared in my hand. Now, he wasn't a Christian, but this cross appeared in his hand. And he said that when the cross appeared in his hand, he held it out. Satan doubled over in pain, like he had an abdominal cramp. And then the cross had vanished, and Satan would stand up, and then the cross appeared again. And Satan would double over in pain and back up. And that happened 3 times. And then he woke up, and all of a sudden he realized, there is a power greater than black magic. There's a power greater than Satan. And in a course of time, I don't have time to tell the whole book, but in a course of time, John Ramirez became a Christian. And when he became a Christian, God called him into a ministry of preaching against the occult. And he goes to groups all over the country, particularly to teenagers, telling them to stay away from the occult. I know what it's like. Stay away from it. There's a power that's greater. You know, we have an episode in the book of Acts that I've always found interesting. Let's look at it. Acts chapter 19. Verses 18 through 20. Paul and his associates have been preaching in Ephesus. You know, we say the letter of Ephesians. Okay, this is Ephesus. And here's what happened. Also, many of those who were believers came, new Christians, confessing and divulging their practices. And a number of those who had practiced magic arts brought their books together and burned them in the sight of all. And they counted the value of them and found it came to 50,000 pieces of silver. So the word of God continued to increase and prevail mightily. That city was filled with demonic magic. And when God's message of salvation came to those people and people got saved, they completely changed. And they took their books of spells and put them together. This is the only time book burning is a good thing. They weren't burning something that was political. They were burning books of magic spells. And they took those books together and they burned them, saying, "I'm renouncing that life. I'm through with that life. I belong to Jesus now. Christ is my king." And the value of the books is 50,000 pieces of silver. That is a denarius. That means that that's equal to a day's wage in the ancient world. That's equal to 50,000 days of work. A lot of money. That's how many books were burned, divulging and renouncing the magic arts. And when people turned away from Satan and surrendered to God, the word of God continued to increase and prevail. People, more and more people got saved. That's incredible. Because you see, there's a power greater than Satan. There's a power greater than the dark magic arts. There's a power greater than the demons. The Son of God appeared for this very purpose, that he might destroy the works of the devil. He still does that. Now, let me tell you something, my friends. Christians should have nothing to do with these supernatural things. Nothing to do with palm readers, tarot cards, horoscopes, and Ouija boards. Don't ever touch them. I know a Ouija board is nothing but plastic and cardboard. But when people get around a Ouija board and they ask a spirit to tell them and guide them something, you know what shows up? A demon. A demon. You never reach Uncle Fred or Aunt Mo. You reach a demon. Don't do that. If you look at horoscopes, I guarantee you there are demons that will be assigned to you that will make some of that stuff in that horoscope come true. They'll make it come true so that you'll follow that and go away from God's word, God's leadership. Christians have nothing to do with those kinds of things. And we should not involve ourselves with Hollywood movies and television shows that promote witchcraft. It's amazing that how that's done today. We should have nothing to do with movies. I'll be honest with you. Harry Potter. Harry Potter seems innocent. It's not. It's teaching young people to think of magic as a way to go. It's demonic. Mayfield witches on TV right now. Demonic. Twilight series. Demonic. Doesn't seem that way. Seems like a romance. Uh-uh. Satan is the master of deception. And he uses things to make it appear like it's innocent. Oh, it's just white magic. It's just white magic. No. There ain't no such thing as white magic. There is no magic elements of the earth that people can use. Uh-uh. There's no ancestors or Indian tribes that people can call upon and do. Uh-uh. It's all demonically inspired. All of it. Stay away from it. Don't be involved in it. Don't be like that. The scripture says in Colossians, He has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of His beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. He delivered us from the domain of darkness. That's what happened in Ephesus when those people took those magic books and they burned them and they were saying, I'm renouncing that life. I belong to Jesus. That's what John Ramirez did when he renounced what he had been involved in for his entire life. All of his family had been involved in it. And he said, I'm no longer a warlock. I'm a warrior for Jesus. Because the Son of Man appeared for this very purpose, that he might destroy the works of the devil. So please don't fall into Saul's mistake. Seek your guidance from God through His Word, according to His Holy Spirit. As children of God, be led by the light, and then the God of light will direct you. Let's bow for prayer.